I do know who you are. I do know what I want. We have a very particular set of skills. Skills we've acquired over a certain amount of time. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. So I will find you, and I will interview you for the Gaffer Tapes.
Give me your name and record.
Eric Samuelson. I was finance director and then chief executive of AFC Wimbledon for 17 years.
Okay, well, you know, it's fair to say that this is part two, and I've sort of stopped part one just as we're about to talk about the end of Neil Ardley's reign. The ground, I think it's in, we should cover that. And the one name that comes up that, to be fair, when we did the original one, was Simon Bassey. And I was working with him then, but I'm not anymore because he's just gone to Portsmouth.
Yep.
So I can say what I want about him. Not that that's going to change. But I'd like to sort of finish off with Arge. He'd sort of, he'd been successful at the club and we're getting towards the end of his reign as manager. Just talk me through that a little bit when you felt that it started to turn wrong.
Well, he rescued us in his first season. When he took us over, we were down near the bottom. We struggled for a while. He recruited to get to the end. In the final game of the season, we're in this unusual position of not caring what other clubs did. If we won, we were safe. If we didn't, we were down. With 15 minutes to go, we're drawing, and therefore down. We've got a soft penalty, for which I'm forever grateful, and saved us. So he saved us in the first season. He then built, in the book, I think the relevant chapter is called Little by Little. All the chapters got song titles.
Yeah.
And then eventually recruited the best strike force I think we've ever had, with a combination of strength in Adebayo and Fenwa, with a delicate touch too, interestingly.
Absolutely, yeah.
A lovely bloke. Tom Elliott, a bit more pace, well, a lot more pace than Bayo. 6'4", power, good head of the ball. Adi Aziz, who was incredibly pacey. And then Lyle Taylor, who was technically excellent and scored a lot of goals. And that he got us via the playoffs, again on a limited budget, but via the Wembley playoffs, which is a memory we can all treasure. And no penalties this time, straight through. We won 2-0, which pleased him no end because he was desperately worried he was going to miss his plane to go on holiday that night. goes into League One, and then in League One, my recollection is that was 2015-16. The first season we did fine. I think it tailed off towards the end because, and you've probably seen this more than I have, when I think however hard you try, when a team realises it's safe, getting them to focus. So that season did not reflect how we were.
I don't even think the players mean to do it.
No, I don't.
It's like a subconscious thing.
I get so annoyed when fans say the players don't try. I've never met a player who doesn't try. Yeah. I really don't believe that. But I think subconsciously it must affect you. It certainly affected me sitting in the stand because now I can really enjoy the games or not, depending on how we're playing, as opposed to it really matters. But then, as always, as everybody tells you in football, recruitment is everything, and in the close season after that, just didn't get the recruitment right. Couldn't replace the strikers because you can go and you can find. We've got Lyle Taylor from Scunthorpe for £10,000. Not so long ago, I was told authoritatively that a London club offered Charlton where he went after us £3 million for him. I mean, that's a good eye for player. That's a combination of Neil and Simon Bassey, who we'll probably come back to. Got Tom Elliott, who was part of an incredibly strong strike force at Cambridge, but then had a poor season, got him in. And we got these strikers and got them in and made them. We made it work. Neil and Neil Cox made it work. But then you lose Bayo immediately because he didn't want to be on the bench. And then you get some injuries. I think we lost Adi Aziz too, due to some quirk of the regulations we didn't understand. He was, anyway, we won't go into that. And all of a sudden, the replacement striker we tried to sign fell apart at the last minute, the deal. And you ended the season without the right number of strikers. And you go through a season just trying to make sure you rely on your strengths, which is pretty interesting to watch.
Yeah.
And at the end of that season, it just got worse. We couldn't bring in the quality of player we needed. The players from the academy were still continue to develop, and we've got some good ones in the team, but we're still not quite ready. And I think it just rebounded. And my attitude to managers has always been, I mean, you were slightly different, to be fair, because you had a deal, an agreed deal and a target.
Yeah.
But my attitude to Terry, who followed you, and Terry Brown, and Neil was always, don't give them targets, don't just, you'll know when it's not, it just isn't right anymore.
Yeah.
And I strongly resisted the calls for Neil to go, because I really did believe he could turn it round. But there comes a point at which, what I did, which was a sign to me that it was time I moved on, was I went against all my principles and was persuaded by other members of the board that we should set some targets for Neil to achieve over 3 or 4 games. And even as I was talking to Neil, I was thinking, I don't believe this is absolute crap, this.
Yeah.
Anybody who tells a manager you need to get 4 points in 3 games, you should sack him because you've lost faith. just as much as you appoint a manager, part-time manager, acting manager after 3 wins. No.
Yeah.
You have a proper look at them.
Yeah.
Those are classic, in my view, classic football mistakes. And I allowed myself to be sucked into doing it. I'm not blaming anybody else.
Why do you think?
The February before we won promotion into League One, which is 2016, I told the parent board I was going to leave. And I give them a decent time scale because I said, overambitious about when we'd finish our new stadium. But I said, I really think you need to appoint my successor in July 2017. So I was giving them 16 months notice. Because the stadium will be well underway then, and then the new man or woman can plan how it works and make it commercially and all very skills I didn't particularly feel I had. And I think the moment you've gone through that process of saying, I'm going, it's a bit like we were talking earlier about a team who know they're safe.
Yeah.
And I think...
You were on the beach?
I think so. Well, no, I was never on the beach. I mean, I still put in the hours, as I will tell you. But I... A little bit of heart goes out of it, a little bit of something. I can't explain what it is.
Yeah, I know.
And also, I think I made more mistakes in the period from then until I left than I did in the rest of my... in the first 14 years I was there.
That's something to say, isn't it? That's got to be hand in hand with knowing that you're leaving. And that must go hand in hand, because why would you all of a sudden be making mistakes that you'd never made?
Well, and I think the stress has got to me, because I might have my time skills wrongly, but I think the month after... So I said I wanted to go 2 months after we got... I won't go into the details of it, but effectively planning permission in principle from Merton Council for the new stadium. So I'm going out on a high. At least I'm announcing I want to go on a high, which is the way to go, I think, if you can. And then the next month, Mayor Johnson, Lord knows what he went on to do, completely ignored the advice of all the experts around him. Well, there's a precedent. And decided that he was going to call in the planning application. And by call in, he means that as Mayor of London, he will take away the responsibility for deciding what happens from Merton, and he will decide. That's the any big planning application in London, the mayor has the right to do that. The new mayor, Sadiq Khan, has the right to do that too.
Yeah.
So he called it in, knowing that he wasn't planning to stand for mayor again, and didn't have time to look at it in the time before he went. So it was a bizarre thing to do, in my opinion. But suddenly you go from, hey, we're on a roll and we're looking at starting to build the stadium by, say, the end of 2016 to, it was, I think, August or September before the election took place, the new mayor, Sadiq Khan, took his role, had time to look at it and sent it back to Merton. He, Johnson, cost us several months, probably the best part of £1 million.
For no particular reason?
Well, How much do you want to get into the politics of it? I think he was influenced by various politics around, as you know, the new stadium is on the boundary between Merton and Wandsworth, and Wandsworth Council didn't completely oppose the stadium, but had serious complaints about it, serious things they wanted different. And, you know, they're a Conservative council, Merton's a Labour council, Johnson's a Conservative, a Tory. I'm guessing, because you'll never know, no one will ever tell you for sure, that they got in his ear.
Yeah.
And then, of course, once he goes and a Labour mayor is appointed, Merton Labour Council getting the new Labour mayor's ear, and back it comes. But, you know, my real point is,
yeah,
I'd gone from everything's fine, we can start recruiting the new person, through to there's a crisis, and then we had a cash flow crisis, which is too complicated to explain.
Yeah.
We were struggling for cash to deliver the stadium. And suddenly I was back in the thick of it, and while with my hand on the front door saying, I'm going.
Yeah.
Not a great place to be mentally. And I just don't think I did myself. I didn't do a bad job. I just didn't do as good a job as I could have done. Is how I see it.
Like the old midfielder whose legs have gone. You know, still knows what he wants to do, but just can't get around the pitch anymore, you know?
Oh, yeah, if only I'd ever been that good.
And with Neil, you know, when you come to the end, how did you deliver it to him?
Neil's, I think I probably said earlier, I'm a principled and a very honest and straightforward man. I think, I know, because I talked to him, one of the most interesting things about writing this book is talking to you and Terry and Neil and indeed Wally Downs years later and saying, how was it at the time? And finding out the things that you didn't feel able to say at the time,
yeah,
or they didn't feel able to say. And I think he just is political enough, diplomatic enough is a better word, not to say anything against it, but I think just thought, well, that's it then, isn't it? And I need to go. So he stayed on for one more game, which was a cup game, televised, which was a real another banana skin game.
I remember it on the 3G. Yes, yes, I remember.
Dire game, yeah, on a 3G pitch.
On a hard 3G, the old 3G.
An old 3G pitch in biblical rainstorm.
Yes, I remember,
And we won with a fortuitous deflected shot by Mitch Pinnock, I think it was. And over the weekend, Neil rang me. We had a chat. He came to see me because you should do these things face to face if you can.
Yes.
And we agreed it was time for him to move on. And I don't think that was the wrong decision, but I think it was made in the wrong way. And I deeply regret that because I've always believed you should do things properly, correctly, and honourably, that's the word I'm looking for. And I don't think I did. And I hate that. I absolutely hate that. But you do what you do. And
Nobody gets them all right, you know. You don't get them all right.
No, you don't. You don't. But anyway, so that was, I think, in part a reflection of the fact that D-Mob Happy would be grossly unfair to me, but that I wasn't as focused and as I had been. And I was also struggling to get the parent board to focus on finding my replacement. So although I told them in February I wanted to go, I think it was December before they showed me the plan for finding my replacement.
Right,
which is a bit slow.
By
anybody's measure. And then I was persuaded to stay on because, you know, I do the self-deprecating bit, but I do have an ego. It's nice to be asked to stay on.
Yeah.
And we were further away from getting the stadium than I thought. And all that just compounded itself.
And that was your promise, Lan. I just want to go, you know, before we go on to Wally, I think that was probably your last appointment as a manager.
It was.
Simon Bassey, I think we need to spend some time about because, you know, he effectively, well, was a player when I got the manager's job. I retired him and he spent 16 years, you know, whatever it was, we spoke about it before, and I always get the promotions wrong. I always say five, and he'll go six or six, and whatever it was, and had an outstanding time at the club, going through levels, and and proven that he was every bit as good for the next level. And now that we've just spent 9 weeks at Barnet together, where I've watched him very closely, sort of as his assistant, seen the level that he's at, which I have to tell you, I always thought he was good, but he's excellent on the coaching field and his mum and all that stuff. And we'll come on to, you know, his management material in a minute, but just go through, not so much the start of it, but, you know, he effectively, when Neil came in, he kept Bass as well.
Well, I think and we should actually briefly touch on it, because, I mean, one of the few good things you did well.
I always thought Mike Rayner was reasonable as well, you know.
Yeah. Well, you basically laid on the line, as I remember it, that Simon, you become coach or you go, effectively.
Yeah.
I'm sure you did it nicer than that, but that was the message.
Yeah,
I said to him, you're not going to get in the team. No. He's blown up.
I says, do you want to play football or do you want... I think I want you to retire and go on the staff. I think you've got something to offer.
That was a bit nicer than I put it, but that was the message.
Yeah, and he said, I still want to play. I went, well, you can, but it won't be here.
Yeah.
And he basked, he said, oh, I want to go and have a think about it. But yeah.
He's an incredibly loyal man, and not everyone knows that. Actually, he started his career as a schoolboy at Wimbledon FC and was released because he was too small. I mean, there's a series of reasons you give players when you release them.
Yeah.
They didn't think he was right for them, whatever the reason was. So yes, he was a coach then for you, became a coach for you in the dugout with you and John Turner.
Yeah, Warren Kelly. He was more with the reserves for me.
Oh, actually, you're right. Yes, with John Morris.
With Johnny Morris, God bless him. But if I'd have stayed for another year, he was coming in with I think I'd spoke to you about that at the time.
Yeah. So Terry came in and I think what happened was we told Simon that if Terry liked him, he'd be staying on. And Simon's no mug. Yeah, so he immediately started briefing Terry and Stuart about what the team was. Which Stuart's a better listener than Terry, because I remember Terry going on about how Mickey Hazell was very right-footed, very left-footed left-back.
Yeah, well, I did that. In part one, it was like... But I'd also told Terry as well.
Yeah,
I'd said, look, this is a guy you have to keep around, you know.
And he developed under Terry, and I think one of the things that probably most interesting for Simon was to see that Terry had gone from... and these are Simon's words, running a big, ugly team at Hayes in order to get the best out of a very limited budget, to someone who had been completely converted to playing football when he went to Aldershot. Although he reverted back a bit to stronger players in the first season to get out the Ryman League, he then moved to pure football. And I think that was fantastic, because it gave Simon a chance to input on his coaching, because Terry opened the door for him to do that. And B, he picked up, I think you learn from the people you work with, and so I think that helped. And then when Neil came along, we were really struggling and weren't sure what to do about Simon. And then, and this sounds very cold-blooded, but basically on the basis that it would cost as much to piss Simon off as keep him to the end of the season, I said to Neil, you know, have a look at him, see what you think. And Neil, because he had neither he nor Neil Cox had any experience at League Two level, effectively snatched our hands off. And then I think at that point, Simon came into his own, developed again, learned other things from another manager. And every manager has moved us on further in one way or another. So he became very effective. And in fact, he had two spells as acting manager when Terry left and when Neil left. In both, I think he won two, drew one and lost one, or won two, drew one and lost two. And they were good results, and you know, given that he was taking over a team that was struggling, they were effective results. So I was delighted that he got a job back in football with Barnet, and even more delighted that he's back in League One. With Portsmouth.
Mm. And just on the, you know, he stood in twice. Was there any, at any period of any time, was it discussed that we just keep him? Or was he not ready then?
Keep him as manager?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, when we appointed Neil, we encouraged Simon to apply. So he went through the process and was, and it wasn't, there's a word for that, I can't think of it. It wasn't just a nod, it wasn't a token.
Yeah, token gesture.
It was, you know, apply. And but Neil was the outstanding candidate, so there was that one. When it came to Neil having left, I can't speak for the other members of the board, but the board was basically four of us. One of them, Ivor Heller, was a massive fan of Wally and what he believed Wally could do. And I'm sure he talked to Harry Bassett, who was acting for Wally.
Yes.
So, both official, formally,
yeah,
as a sort of as an agent, but also as a beating the drum for him. So I had Ivor, who was passionate about bringing him in. And of the candidates, I didn't think that we could politically appoint Simon. I think there was a general feeling there's a time for change. And Simon was by now very closely associated with Neil. And whatever his qualities, and they are strong qualities, I didn't think it was... There had been support for it from the parent board, well, from the rest of the board, from the parent board. Having said that, he brought in Stephen Reid, and together, the pair of them together, were very impressive. And I honestly think if they'd applied the other way around, they'd have been in with a chance. But I think the idea of appointing Simon when he'd been associated with what had gone wrong, rightly or wrongly,
I'd said that. Early, I said it to him at the time.
It wasn't realistic or possible. Where I think I failed was, I didn't explain this to him, and I should have done.
Yeah, I remember it at the time saying that to him, that timing's massive in football.
Yeah, just the wrong time.
Just the wrong time. And people go, well, that's a cop-out. No, it's not. It's obvious. And I said, you know, it's going to be difficult for you because it just that's how it's sensed and that's how it played out.
But
I have to say, you missed a trick with the two of them because... Stephen Reid's very, very good, and so is Bass. But I think I understood. I don't know where Simon ever would or ever will or does, but I understood that politically it was a difficult time, you know. But
well, anybody who'd ever worked with him commended him to us, quite rightly too, because look, he's now gone on to Portsmouth, and probably, presumably, hopefully, will win promotion this season, and he'll have that on his CV too. But I think the downside of what happened was that Wally came in and brought in Glyn Hodges, which is fine, you know, you bring in your own man. But Simon was then effectively relegated. I mean, Wally's line was consistently, I'm not here to put people out of work. But nor was he there to put Simon in work either. He didn't have a role for him, really. So Simon floated for the rest of that season. And the problem I had as a chief executive was that I've always believed you support your manager. You have to support your manager. You don't undermine them. You don't overrule them. Because when you get to the point where you're going to do that, except if they want to sign somebody you can't afford, that's something.
Absolutely, yeah.
But
yeah,
when you get to that point, they shouldn't be your manager anymore, or you shouldn't be their boss anymore.
Yeah. And I have to say that you did that with me. You know, and I never, listen, if you hadn't have done it with the people that have managed your football club, you wouldn't have a book because they wouldn't sit down and talk to you. So that's a fact. You know, I think we'd all say, you know, you backed us to the hilt, to be honest.
No, thank you. And I mean, I did think, when I look back on it, that nobody directly said no to me asking them to be interviewed, but a couple of, I think, dodged the question. But that's not bad.
Yeah.
After 17 years, yeah, there's only a couple like that.
That was a poor finish for him, though, Bas.
Oh, it was awful. It was dreadful. And furthermore, when I finally retired in April, which was before the end of that season, the Wally's season, which, you know, we stayed up, Wally kept us up. I effectively then, from my point of view, left him stranded. He had a new chief executive, didn't really know him. He had clearly didn't have a role. It was obvious he was going to be going. Wally didn't have a role for him. And actually the better thing to do would have been to say that a lot sooner.
Yeah.
And really, his only role then was to, let's be blunt, seek to command the best possible pair he could get,
yeah,
and the best possible reference, which He's not daft. I'm sure he did that. I'm not privy to the terms. I don't want to be, but I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
And that's terribly sad. And then, you know, it took him a while to get into Barnet. But look, 18 points from 13 games. A team, I think, had gone, a handful of points from 20-odd games.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal achievement. It was pretty well the same squad. So he proved that he could do it.
Yeah. Very good assistant, have we said? No, I'm only joking. I'm only joking. I want to put on record, it was 98% Bass and 2% me. But,
oh, you were as much as that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Stuart used to make the tea in the mornings. But I actually said to him that, and it's a funny thing because we talked about it when he decided he was going to go to Portsmouth. And I said, well, look, the one thing is now people know who you are. He said, isn't that strange that at 16 years at Wimbledon with six promotions and people only know about me now for 9 weeks? And I said to him, it's not reality, it's public perception. You know, it's just what
I mean, there's almost a complete aside. Years ago, I was a partner in PwC. I was actually made a partner in one of the predecessor firms, but that's too complicated to explain.
Yeah.
But I missed out on partnership. I went through the process and failed. And one of the things I did was I went to see a professional. I suppose you'd call her a counsellor. I'm not sure that's what she is. And she made the scales drop from my eyes. She said, you've got to stop waiting for people to see how good you are. You have to tell them and show them. And that's not me. That really is not me. I don't do that sort of thing. I should have given that message to Simon because it changed me entirely. I've never been especially pushy, but two of the key points in my life when I wanted to be involved in the club, and I said to Ivor and Chris, you need a finance director. And then when Chris resigned and I said, the best person for this job is sitting in the room, a bit politer than that.
Yeah.
The guy who filled the partner panel would never have said that, would never got that job, and we wouldn't be talking, and I wouldn't have had the great, wonderful 17 years that I did. So, and Simon, I hope he'll now raise his profile because he deserves it. What's lovely, incidentally, is Eileen stays on Facebook. I gave up Facebook years ago.
Yeah.
I don't like looking at photos of people's breakfast and their tattoos. But she says, seems to be nothing but goodwill and good luck. Wish him the very best from the people who the Wimbledon fans are.
Yeah, which is massive.
Great, so well thought of.
I'd seen that on Twitter, you know, that typical of the supporters of the club, that they'd sort of adopted Barnet as their second club virtually because they want him to do well, you know.
Yeah, that's lovely.
I would say, and we're spending a little bit of time on him, but I think he deserves it. But
he suffered 17 years.
Yeah.
Part and parcel of the six promotions.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't go through that without having significant positive qualities.
And to then go, it's funny because I then go and work for him. So it's role reversal. And
that wasn't how it was when you were there.
Yeah, probably was. But the one thing I remember driving in, I remember in my head thinking, I hope he's okay with this. I hope he's not sort of apprehensive about if he's got something to say to me because he's the manager that he worries about, you know, hurting my feelings nearly. I didn't need to worry too long because he says it how it is. I think that's why we get on because we've always done that. But what I would say on record is he's absolutely ready now. You know, I think if there's, you know, I don't want to talk Mark Robinson out of a job. I hope he's there for many years, but I think the Portsmouth thing's good for him. I think Danny and Nicky, there'll be stability there. He's more than ready to be a manager. He's now proved he can be a manager. I think there's going to be a stage in maybe 2 or 3 years' time where he effectively has to step out and do it. You know, he might. We talked this out and we're different because when he was talking about going to Portsmouth, I'm going, you've got to get your name above the door. You've got to be the Danny Cowley. You know, you've got to be, you've been putting food on everyone else's table for 16 years. You know, you've got to be at the table now. And he said, no. But the difference between us is I only ever seen my name on the door. You know, I wanted to be the number one. he effectively can adapt to what's, don't get me wrong, now I'm having a great time, but you know what I mean, through my career. And I'm a little frustrated that he didn't stay at Barnet to be the number one.
Yeah. And he's off to Portsmouth now, and yeah. that is a sort of seal of excellence from people who are well respected in the game.
Absolutely.
Said a lot about him.
Yes.
Because one of the things that really struck me, I interviewed, actually they're more like conversations as interviews, I interviewed Lee Minchell.
Yes.
Who gave up his job as, I think, quantity surveyor to become a full-time footballer. About the playoff final when we got into the Football League, and he said, well, the great thing about that was I was now in League Two as a member of the PFA. I got a pension, and if it didn't work and I dropped a level, I could still probably be full-time. If I'd stayed in the conference and it didn't work, I'd been back to part-time. Yeah. And this is, there's a sort of parallel here with Simon, that if it went to Barnet, and for whatever reason, there's all sorts of reasons you might not succeed, that didn't succeed, where do you go next?
Yes.
Whereas at Portsmouth, the Cowley's reputation is already made.
Yeah.
Their seal of approval says a lot for Simon. I think it gives him, you know, he's got a family to feed and a life to live. Yeah. I think it gives him a next step if for any reason it doesn't work out.
I get
and
that.
Therefore, you have to take it.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I understood. I'm just saying that there's part of me was frustrated because
I think in a
perfect world, he's ready to do it. And I think he will be ready to do it. And you say everybody learns off every manager. I learned off him. You know, the things he did and the way he worked and what he said. And it was very, very, very interesting, you know. But listen, I've given him enough time, you know. Let's move on. So,
I mean, this is about you and me.
Absolutely. It's always. Didn't you know that? But then obviously your last appointment, Wally Downs, you know. Talk me about that one. Talk me in.
Well, I am trying to promote my book, but this is in the book that we had the usual number of interviewees. As a board, we ended up with four. And as a board, one of the things we felt was really important was someone who was going to walk into the dressing room and take control of a fairly senior, very experienced bunch of players. And the one who struck us as the most likely to do that, because he blew us away in terms of his presence, his presentation, was Kevin Nolan.
Yeah.
So we offered him the job, and I really don't understand what happened there, because he told us what he was being paid at his previous job, and I'd said to his agent, well, if that's what he's expecting, don't send him for a second interview. You're wasting our time and his.
Yeah.
So when he agreed to come, we thought, well, what we could offer would be fine. But we offered him the job, and I don't recollect ever hearing back, which I thought was bizarre.
Wow.
I wonder if part of it was, well, you can only speculate. I wonder if part of it was I made it very clear that we wouldn't be paying an agent's fee. but that's possibly unfair to an agent.
Yeah.
So then it was okay. And we had three other candidates, and the two were competing. One was, candidates was Sean Daly, and the other one was Wally. There's a loud voice from the wings of fans, especially those who remember Wally in his days with the club, which I think ended just before the FA Cup one win. I think he moved on then.
Yeah.
And were incredibly noisy about appointing him. And there was Sean, who I think he was there at the time, he was at Oxford working with Carl Robinson. And Oxford weren't much above us in the league. And, you know, while you try and pick the right man and the best man, how do you justify appointing somebody from a team that's doing no better than you?
Yeah, and isn't the manager.
Yeah, exactly, and isn't the manager. So the board was, I think, probably indecisive would be the best way to put it.
I think as well, if I remember at the time, which was a little bit, was very unlike Wimbledon, and I certainly know that because I've been close to each appointment, it leaked very early that Wally Downs was in it. You know, I thought it got out into the public too easy at that particular time.
I don't know how it gets out, but, you know, he's working with some wily old people in Dave Bassett. His son is a journalist.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you tell your family what you're doing?
Oh, listen, why wouldn't you use everything you can to get the job? You know, I was saying on the club's part, but anyway.
Ollie was very, very keen to get it.
Yeah.
He came strongly recommended as a coach. My real reservation was, could he be a manager? But in the end, we concluded he was the right person to appoint, and we did.
And did brilliant, if I remember right, in the first.
Yeah, I mean, he did well at first, and then results collapsed. I think he did well up to about Christmas, and got us, I think, within striking distance of safety, maybe 3 points.
Yeah.
And then results collapsed, and we ended up 11 points from safety. And then I think it was interesting to talk to him about the tactics he employed, which were basically the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
Because he said, you know, the players at this stage, when their confidence is down, they don't want anything too sophisticated. And so the message was simple, was get it wide, keep it out the middle, play it long down the line. Not goofball,
no,
long down the line.
Into the channel,
so,
yeah.
Out the middle, keep it wide, hit it long. And apparently, I hear from some of the players interviewed that was basically all the half-time team talk was, just keep doing it, keep reinforce that message.
Yeah.
The extent that it became a sort of jokey chant among the players when he wasn't in the room.
Yeah.
But he also had, and that worked, you could see that working, but he also had some good fortune. We'd signed some good players who, over the years, we signed players, I'll step back a bit. When you're near the bottom of the league, you don't have a big budget, you don't pay a lot. You tend to take risks on players.
Yeah.
So you take a risk on a Lyle Taylor on £10,000. You take a risk on Barry Fuller, who signed from Gillingham. You'll do well to get 30 games out of him in a year. Played a ludicrous number, like 200-odd games in 5 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were told that his career's nearly over. His knees have gone. So some of those work really well. And, of course, the naysayers forget them.
Yeah.
And one or two didn't work so well, so we recruited James Hansen, who was a powerful striker, but who had some injuries, not funny enough, the injuries that
you
historically
were, yeah, had. Yes.
And other players like Wordsworth.
What player?
What a good player he was, but again, he wasn't completely fit when he joined us, for not very bad reasons, and then he got injured, because you often do when you're not fully fit.
Yeah.
They came back. And when I watch, I often I have this strange thing, as I have no visual memory. I cannot conjure up in my head what happened. I have to watch it again. So I've often gone back and looked at it. And the number of games where the goals were laid on by Wordsworth is one. And even when we beat West Ham in the FA Cup, the winning goal was a lovely little chip from him to the far post for Toby Civic to come hurtling in and put it away.
He's a
very, very good player.
Well, I've worked with him, obviously, at Barnet. And when we got there, he was suspended or injured. And then
I think he has an injury problem.
Yeah, he came back into training. And he looked good in training, and Bass had said to me, he's a player, you know. And when he got into the team, he's technically one of the best players I've ever been around, you know.
Yeah.
My description to him was, because he's a bit hot-headed and he gets sent off, and like, I think if Bass ain't the manager, he's gone. Only Bass had faith in him and talked the chairman off the ledge, he's gone. But I was having a chat with him about, you know, I says, in my head, he's a scratch golfer playing golf with 28 handicappers. He's just a million miles from anybody else, you know. Just as I've said it because I've worked with the guy, you know. But so, and I've interrupted you so rudely, but
You know, I actually raised this point with Wally, who bridled a bit at it, as any manager would. But I said, you know, we then had a really big stroke of luck. What? You know, I kept this up.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's true. In the second last game of the season, Accrington thumped Plymouth 5-1. And I talked to the Accrington club secretary, who said everything we hit, even the miss hits, just went in.
Just went in, yeah.
You know, five or six shots, five goals, thumped them. Which meant the goal difference was such, we went at the last game of the season, we only needed to draw. Would have been very different if it had been a 2-1. They had to win by four clear goals, I think, and we had to not win for them to stay up. So we played out one of the dullest, most dire, awful nil-nils I've ever seen. Very rewarding, because I think Plymouth won 3-2, if I remember right. But they didn't win by enough, and we stayed up on goal difference. So you know, we didn't have a lot of luck earlier in the season. Wally didn't have a lot of luck with some of his early games. I don't necessarily believe it evens out over a season, but that one little bit there transformed the options for the final game. We only needed to draw.
Yeah.
Although when he brought on a left back and took off a striker in the last minute of normal time, and the opposition gets a corner, I was thinking, and you're old enough to remember this, Bobby Charlton goes off and Norman Hunter comes on against Germany in 1990.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Turns the game around, doesn't it? Peter Benetti in goal, remember that?
Oh, yeah, yes, sadly. Sadly for him, too, because he's a good goalie. On he came, and we stayed up, and then by that time, I'd retired. So what happened the following season? I mean, Wally was gone by, I think it was November the following season, because he'd got caught in the issues around betting.
Yeah, I remember at the time, I remember thinking that I don't think that the team was doing particularly well.
No, I think we hadn't won. Although he said there's nothing about our performances that really troubled him. We just needed a goal. And you've been in that position, I'm sure.
The problem is that what makes you nervous is not winning football matches, no matter how you try. You try and stay with a team that's performing because you think that it's only a matter of time, but sometimes it doesn't happen. How can I put this to you? It seemed. Let me ask you this.
If it's going to be a hard one, you've thought about it.
Yeah. If Wimbledon are top of the league when Wally Downs gets caught betting, does he get sacked?
Well, if I was a politician, I'd say I don't do hypotheticals.
But you're not.
Well, you have to have some.
Yes.
But when I actually finally retired, one of the things I made clear, and certainly in my own head, was I am staying away. I made it very clear that if anybody wanted anything from me, or any help, or any advice, or this institutional memory, you know, I remember things that no one else is there was ever involved in, which is helpful. Just ask. But I'm not going to come around and offer my opinion, and you won't see me except for match days. So I genuinely didn't know what was going on, although some people insisted on telling me their versions of events.
Yeah.
The problem I had with Wally was he told me in my interview with him, where he's very open, his side of things and his perspective, and I think he felt really quite badly done to. But any self-respecting employer, and that's one thing Wimbledon, AFC Wimbledon is, would refuse to tell me their side of the story.
Yes.
So I couldn't put in the book only Wally's side. I thought that was grossly unfair. But I think it's clear that he felt he shouldn't have been sacked for what he told me. I've not looked it up. I don't disbelieve him, but I've not seen the evidence.
Yeah.
Was basically bets that amounted to about 10 quid. I think 3 one-off bets, and then some 8 years previously, before it had dawned on him, he wasn't allowed to. So I think he felt it very harshly dealt with. Well, no, I don't think that. I know he feels harshly dealt with. It's interesting, isn't it? At what point, to finally turn to your question, at what point do you surrender your principles? At what point do you say, actually, it's the end result that matters and not the means? At what point do you say, because we're top of the league, we'll turn a blind eye to that and any other perceived things and concerns you have about
it? It nearly goes with the question you asked at Neil Ardley's interview about the racism thing. It nearly goes, it's not the same thing, but it's along those lines, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think...
And what was the answer to that? What was the proper answer to that question then?
Well, the purpose of the question was to see how people responded to stress by throwing them a completely unexpected question using language they probably wouldn't expect from me.
Yes.
If they knew anything about me at all. And the more important thing for me was how they went about answering it, whether it's snap judgment or whether there's a thought process.
Yeah.
But actually the answer Neil gave, which is must the best one, because
he'd been time, briefed yes, in anticipation yeah.
of the question, was, well, in the end, that's not his words, but that's a moral and ethical question, and you need to tell me what your club stance is on that. It's not for me as a man to decide that, which I thought A was clever, but B was right.
Yeah.
It's about what sort of club are you. So I think if we'd been top of the league, we'd have found out what sort of club we were.
That's a... do you know, that's brilliant.
I think...
That's a great answer.
What would I have done? I honestly don't know. Is the honest
answer. I don't really think you don't need know. To know. And do you know what? I'm going to end it there. I'm going to end it there because it's a brilliant end to the interview. And we've done it over two parts. It's taken, I'm going to say, 5 weeks in between, 4 or 5 weeks in between. But
I was going to say 4 or 5 weeks of talking. It wasn't that.
Yeah, fun. Yeah. I haven't read the book. I'm keeping it for holiday. But I have, like my missus says, I had a flick over it. So I'm just flicking over this book. She went, "You're looking for the bits you're in, aren't
of
you?"
Of course.
And I did, and they were very, very straight and honest. And I didn't have a, you know, I can't say that any of it was made up. It was all straight. So I imagine the rest of the book's going to be the same. Thank you, Chairman.
You know I was never. I don't know if you remember, but you got very irate with Sam Elliott because he described you as under pressure FC Wimbledon manager Dave Anderson.
Yes.
And for a while when you called me Chem, I used to
call you. I do, yeah.
To try and stop you, but it never succeeded.
No. Thanks ever so much for your time. Good luck with the book.
Okay.
One last question. Just quickly, if you can. The whole, what a place for you to finish the ground, the new ground.
Yeah, I mean, the ground, I think the real achievement of the ground, and this is not a promotion of my book, but when I was writing the book, what it struck me was, because you move on I move on, and Ireland is one of the things I'm really good at, one of the very few things I'm good at, is moving on.
Yeah.
And what I moved on from was saying, well, actually, we persuaded people that we could have a stadium, but we had nothing.
Yeah.
We got a bank loan when we were at the eighth tier to help finish off buying King's Meadow. Pretty well the bottom of non-league football, senior football. We got a new stadium. We presented to the world that we were ready for a new stadium, and we got one. And I think when I look back at it, that is a bloody miracle. I really don't. And what it was is almost a sleight of hand. Yeah, we're fine, we're ready, we'll go for it. The only asset we had was that we'd bought King's Meadow when we had a football team, but no money, and we built a £30 million stadium.
Incredible.
Which I think, when I look at it, and this is not about me, it's just, how did that happen? So I think that's fantastic. When it comes to stadium itself, the building itself is not that important. It's the fact that it's there. That's what's the really important thing. We have a stadium in Wimbledon, and that's our base, and what a fantastic base it is. And now with all this new energy that's come in, because we ended up looking like we couldn't afford it, all the energy that came in to raise the money to finish it off, I think the same sort of energy is around the club now that was there when Ivor, Chris, Trevor and Mark started it off. And that's got to be for the good. And I don't have that energy anymore, and I just look on it and think, "Well, off you go, guys." But not for me.
And so you'll obviously go to games now. Will you still be on the terrace? Because you were always a terrace guy, or were you nice sitting in the seats?
I used to steal buns from the directors around and take them behind the goal for my boys. that was my passport for getting in. I'll probably sit in the stand because I think I want to sit with Eileen now, who's not as, but neither of us is as mobile as we were.
Yeah.
I want to watch from there.
And have you been in the ground yet with fans?
Yeah, I went the very first game and everybody was there as a fan, but there's no fans in allowed. And I went to the game, the ramp-up game or the trial game, which allowed, I think it was 2,000 people in, Eileen and I went. It was great to be in the stadium, and it was great to see the team playing and great to hear some noise. But I want... Somebody asked me what the best part of my time has been with Wimbledon. I don't think you did, but I'm going to answer that now anyway, which is the best time will be when the teams walk out to a full stadium full of fans and the roof gets lifted for our first competitive game, not some...
Yeah, a real one, friendly,
but some proper game, because that's what it was all about in the end.
End of story. Tips.